Hello, and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm one of your hosts here, Dana Osman, here with my friend Chavruta Ann Gordon. Our daf today, Masechet Nazir, daf Mem Vav, page 46. We're going to start at the bottom of Mem Hey, because there was a Mishnah there that goes on to this daf. And it continues with a description of what the Nazir did to finish being a Nazir. Hayam Mevashel Teshlamim O Shulkan. So he could cook the Shlamim, or he could, means like to basically like, to overcook it, okay? HaKohen notel et hazroa b'shela min ha'ayil. So the Kohen takes the cooked foreleg of the shlamim ram, the chala matzachat min hasal, urekik matzachat, and one unleavened loaf from the basket, and one unleavened wafer. So, you know, most of the baked goods in the Mikdash, in the temple, actually could not be chameit. So they were always unleavened items. So we would take this unleavened bread and this unleavened wafer, v'notein al kapav ha-nazir minifim, and he puts them on the nazir's palms, and he waves them around. So this is straight from the psukim themselves in Bamidbar in chapter 6, verses 19 through 20, which says, v'lakacha kohen adzoro b'sheila min ha'ayil, v'chala matzachat min hasel rikik matzachat. So it's exactly a quote from our Mishnah, but that Mishnah is basically quoting the Pesukim. Benatav al kape ha-nazir ashil hitrachu et naziro. And it says that he puts it on the palms of the Nazir who shaved his head. Ve'nifo tam ha-kohen tenufa lifnei Hashem. Kodesh hu la-kohen al-chazad tenufa al-shokat truma. Ve'achar yishtah ha-nazir yayin. Right? And they're holy, and the Kohen will wave them in a waving before Hashem. They're holy, and they're the Kohen's. And the breast of the waving and the thigh of the heaving, and then the nazir is allowed to drink. Now, and you're going to talk a little bit more about this process of waving. Heaving was done in numerous occasions in the Beit HaMikdash. It's sort of a like ritual of the temple. I think it's one that's a little bit difficult for us to relate to, because I'm trying to think if there's anything we particularly wave, and I don't think there really is something that we do. But there was something that we did. What?
A lulav.
Lulav. Yeah, we wave a lulav. Okay. So it's a similar idea. It's like we wave it around. It probably has same connotations. It's a lulav. It's like an way of, I guess, like identifying God as being all over. I don't know, but I haven't seen as much about it. Ann and I were discussing this as we would have liked. And after he does this, then the Nazir can drink wine and he can, you know, become tummy. Now, notice it doesn't mention anything about shaving the hair because he already shaved his head. That is, it's interesting that in the process of ending your nizirut, one of the prohibitions you sort of commit, but the other two are not done until after everything is done. Rabbi Shimon says, "Kevin shenizrak alav echad min hadamim." If the blood of one of the offerings was thrown on the mizbeach, right? Hutar nazir lishtot b'yayin litamei lametim. That's when the Nazir finally becomes permitted to drink wine and to become Tameh. So Rabbi Shimon's is a little bit earlier. It can happen before the waving actually happens.
So one of the things I find interesting about what happens in the Gemara's treatment of this Mishnah is that it basically says like, okay, fine, Mishnah, like those are the details, but what happens if something goes wrong? And that's what we see here. I'm jumping down a bit. I'm on Amud Aleph. A little bit of the way down into the Gemara, Amar Rav, and yes, Yordan, I'm starting right with the waving. Tenufa b'nazir ma'kevet, right? If the Kohen didn't wave yet, right, on the over this korban of the Nazir, then it gets in the way of stopping those prohibitions of the Nizirut. Meaning, according to this, again, as you've just said, it's not Rabbi Shimon's opinion, it's the Tanakama, but Rav in the Gemara follows through on that, right, to say, It delays, it forestalls the change of status to the Nazir in terms of the prohibitions. So whatever we do and don't know about this process of tenufa, of waving, and it's explicit in the verse, right? But it's also seems to be of tremendous import, you know, a very important element of the process by which the Nazir kind of is relinquished or relinquishes himself from the prohibitions of the Nazirut. Aliba Daman. So, of course, the Gemara is going to say, well, according to whom is Rav talking? Because we just saw two different opinions within the Mishnah. Eli, Maliba Darabanan. Tiglachat Amri Rabbanan Lo Ma'akva Tanufa Mibai. So if we want to say that in fact Rav is following the opinion of Rabbanan, we say that the waving will prevent him from, you know, going about his business, doing regular things that the Nazir is prohibited to do. Well, 1 second, we've had a statement in the opinion of Rabbanan already. The rabbi said that tiglachat, the shaving, if you haven't shaved, it doesn't get in the way of finishing off the nizirut. So the waving is going to, it's this thing of like, you know, I've just said, based on Rav's opinion, well, it must be that the waving is of tremendous significance. And the Gemara comes and says, come on, it can't be of greater significance than the shaving of the head. So how? Where is Rav getting this? Ella alibad Rabbi Lezer. So rather, say that it lines up with the opinion of Rabbi Lezer, pshita, right? Because that's going to be obvious. What did Rabbi Lezer say? He is the one who said that the Nazir could only drink wine after he had completed the whole process of finishing off the Nazirut. Ha'amar Rabbi Lezer, achar masim kulam, after all the things, meaning all the actions that the Nazir has to take to finish off the Nazirut. Mahu detema. So then what does that really mean, right? Kevan de l'inyan kapara shayre mitzvahi hachanami lo ta'akev kamashman. So the Gemara says, well, you want to say that because what we've got here is atonement, and that's what's happening through all of these different proceedings, right? The waving is like a, it says shayre mitzvahi. It's an accoutrement of the mitzvah, right? So then you're going to get your atonement even if you didn't actually wave. So, two, that should mean that not waving should not get in the way of finishing off your Nazirut. Rav, therefore, is going to line up with Rabbi Lezer's opinion. Did I say this right? That Rabbi Lezer's opinion is that you need this waving to get out of your Nazirut. The question then is, you know, to what extent is it going to be ma'akev? To what extent would it be prohibited? Rabbi Lezer says everything has to be completed. So that's where Rav's idea that this, or Rav's stated idea, that not waving would prevent the finishing off of the Nizirut, that's where it comes from. Umi ma'akva. So now the Gemara wants to know, you know, again, a question on Rabbi Lezer's opinion, is it, does this not, this lack of waving, is it going to get in the way? Vahatanya, meaning even though we've just said, the presumption is that we've just said that yes, it is going to get in the way. I want to just note that what we're doing here in talking about it this way is literally following the thought passage of the Gemara, which is weighing, you know, what's really going on in the opinions of these, in this case, Amoraim. Vatanya zot Torat Nazir. Well, it says in the Tosefta, or it's really, it says in the Tosefta here brings the verse from Sefer Bamidbar, the book of Numbers, chapter 6, verse 21, Zot Torat HaNazir. This is the law of the Nazir. Ben sheyesh lo kapayim, ben she'ein lo kapayim. We'll come back to that in one moment. This is the law of the Nazir, meaning all of these details is come to be the process by which the Nazir, you know, initially becomes a Nazir, experiences Nazirut, and then closes it off. Then the question is, well, does he have kapayim? Does he have palms? Meaning, does he have hands, right? Or does he not have palms? He has palms, and I understand that this would be a rare, you know, rare condition, but one who is lacking those palms of the hands would not be able to do the waving. And therefore, you know, shouldn't we conclude that the waving cannot be essential? It's not critical to finishing off the Nizirut, because you could imagine a case of a person who took on Nizirut and then had to do this waving and couldn't, and nonetheless completed the Nizirut. But the Gemara is going to go on, and we talked about this in a hypothetical way earlier. You know, any Nazir could be stuck, let's say, or the question is, would they be stuck if they are missing any one of the elements that they have to go through the procedure to finish off the Nizirut? So specifically, the first case is, what if he doesn't have the palms to do the waving? That Ella Hadatanya Zot Torat Nazir, the same way you could take that same Tosefta and apply it to the same verse, which says this is the law of the Nazir, whether or not the person has hair. If we're going to say that it's Zot Torat Nazir, this is the law of the Nazir, regardless of whether he has hair, so then aren't you going to say that not having shaved would not be ma'akev, it would not get in the way of finishing off the nizirut of being able to go about your business. Vahatanya, so to answer that, we have another breita, again brought from the Tosefta. Vahatanya, nazir mimurat. A nazir who is bald, right? Beit Shammai omrim eno tzarich la'avir te'ara losho. Beit Shammai says, he's bald, he can't shave, that's it. Beit Hillel omrim tzarich la'avir te'ara al rosho. Beit Hillel says, no, go through the process. Meaning the fact that no hair comes off is irrelevant for Beit Hillel, right? The point is he's going through the process of doing the shaving, and that's that. The question, of course, on Beit Shammai is, and the Gemara picks up on this, is, so what is he supposed to do? Va'amar Ravina, so Ravina says, my eno sarif leveit Shammai. When Beit Shammai says he doesn't have to do anything, does that mean he's stuck being a nazir forever? Or does that mean he doesn't have a need to do this at all, and his nazirut ends without it? So the Gemara says, eno tzarich ein lo takana. It means Beit Shammai's position is that he can't fix it. He can't get himself out of the nazirut. Making the razor go over his head that Beit Hillel would accept isn't enough because he's not really shaving anything. Meaning we're talking about somebody who is truly and completely bald. Ha'le Beit Hillel yesh lo takana. But according to Beit Hillel, he can pass that razor over his head and then that he's done the process and that's sufficient. So I find this to be, you know, an important application of what happens when you can't complete all of these processes. And should not surprise us that Beit Hillel is going to be more, I'm going to say more forgiving, right? The idea that Beit Hillel has a way for this Nazir to complete his Nazirut, even though he doesn't have any hair, to actually shave. And Beit Shammai says, no, he can't shave. But instead of meaning like, that's okay, he can't do it, so it's irrelevant to his completion of his process, the Gemara says, no, Beit Shammai means he can't ever get out of it because he has no hair. I would recommend that anybody who's truly bald should not become a Nazir, except for the problem is that there's no indication, right, of how long, let's say, this Nazir was a Nazir. Maybe he became a Nazir and only afterwards lost his hair, right? There are potential case applications from this machloket that are not found here on our daf.
Yeah, I just think they're really interesting questions that the Gemara presents here, you know, and I almost was like, I'm surprised I didn't even think of that, you know, especially the questions, you know, around if you are lacking a body part that you need to finish a ritual, what is the status of that person? Does it basically prevent you from, you know, actually finishing that particular ritual, whether it be Nazir, whether it be Mitzorah?
Which is what the Gemara goes on to, right? The Gemara goes on to say, go ahead, sorry.
No, the Gemara goes on to describe that. I think that whole concept is very, very interesting and sort of, I think, plays into like how important, you know, the goof, like the actual body of the person is to perform some of these mitzvot. Like they're intricately intertwined with each other. And so I think they're very valid halakhic questions. And I think particularly as sort of modern, you know, learners where we've built, thankfully, much more inclusive societies and recognize that there's all different types of people, right? With all different, you know, abilities. And some of that may be physical or not, you know, and people are physically different. You know, how does that impact the halakha? Like, I think today we probably would go out of our way to say, of course, these people could fulfill these mitzvot. That's not the attitude right away that the Gemara takes. I think that's reflective of the time that they're in. But you know, still very interesting to learn about.
100%. As we like to say, by which I mean, yes, I agree fully.
Okay, I'm going to move on to the last Mishnah here on the daf. Gilach Allah al Hazevach. So let's say he shaved his head after the first sacrifice. Okay, so remember you have to bring all three of these korbanot that they bring, and the nazir shaves his head after the first one. Vinimsa pasul, and then they find out that the korban he brought actually was pasul. Okay, so you know, and therefore they could not actually throw the blood on the mizbeach. Tigalto psula, so his head also considered to be no longer valid. Uzevachav lo alulo, and the sacrifices that he brought after the head shaving don't actually they don't count for him. So essentially, you know, what this means is that the head shaving ends up really violating his nizirut, because he was only allowed to shave his head, right? Because one of the korbanot was brought and the blood was thrown on the mizbeach. So it's a little bit odd the way that, you know, it's almost like he violated the nizirut in the end, okay? Then it goes on to say, gilach al chatat shelo lishma. Let's say he shaved after a chatat was brought, and the chatat was not brought, what means lo lishma literally means, you know, not for its name. What it means is the chatat was given, you know, to for as some other sacrifice, but as some other korban, right? Like, let's say, you know, it was sacrificed to be an ola, and not as a chatat, so therefore that chatat is not valid anymore. And then he brings his other korbanot, and they were for their correct purpose. To gachato pisula, again, his head shaving is invalid. And the sacrifices don't count for him. Gilech al haola o al hashlamim shalolishman. If he shaved after an ola or shlamim, that again were not brought for their designated purpose. And then he brought his other offerings for their designated purpose. So again, the head shaving is not valid, and the other sacrifices do not count for him. So again, these are all scenarios where essentially, you know, something wasn't done correctly, and he's not doing the concluding rituals the way they need to be done. Rabbi Shimon says, Otoa zevach lo alulo, that sacrifice, which was not offered for its correct designated purpose, doesn't count for him. Aval shars vachim alu, but the other ones do count for him. And the Gemara is going to explain that, right? And then they give a final halacha here. Ve'im gilach al shan. After all three sacrifices, v'nimsa achad mehan kasher, and only one of them was found to be valid. Tegachu tok sheira, his head shaving is valid. Ve'avis shar zivachim. And he can bring other sacrifices, right? He has to bring the other sacrifices, which were disqualified. So the Gemara is going to explain exactly what Rabbi Shimon means, and that Rabbi Shimon basically holds who shaves after being like a voluntary shlamim, basically has completed what he needed to do, right? So shlamim, what he's basically trying to say is that, let's say he happened to bring like another shlamim, right? Even though it necessarily wasn't intended as the shlamim for the Nazir, but because it was a voluntary shlamim, that is okay. And he does that based on a reading of the psukim themselves. When I read a Mishnah like this, you know, my question is, were these types of mistakes actually common? Did these things actually happen? I could see where like, you know, a korban maybe was found to be pasul afterwards, or maybe sometimes there were mix-ups about the designation or what you thought. You know, there were many sacrifices brought every day, but I just don't have a sense like how common this all was.
I can't answer you, but I do wonder how many nizirim there were in a regular way. And did the same people become nizirim again?
Well, we did have that Mishnah, remember, that talked about, or the Gemara, I can't remember what it was, you know, that when the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed and there were all these nizirim who didn't know.
Right.
So right. Certainly was more than one. It sounded like this was sort of like a commonplace scenario.
Right. But so again, was it like a common practice that everybody knew what to do? Or was it the same kinds of people who sought out the extra asceticism and managed it that way? Or was it a group of people? Like, as much as we know here, and there's a great deal of detail about the process of the Nizirut, we kind of don't have so much actual, like, what, historical register kind of detail. It would be nice.
I don't know. That to me was my big question here. Well, that's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP on our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.